This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I trust you're having a great afternoon. Well, the provincial government is expected to release its budget, delayed by COVID-19, of course, at the end of the month, and Premier Andrew Furey has already indicated that everything is on the table in terms of getting government spending under control, while at the same time working towards economic recovery. The Fraser Institute this week released a report on the changing size of government in Canada, 2007 to 2018. Here to discuss the report further is Fraser Institute policy analyst and co-author, by the way, Alex Whalen. We reached him in Halifax. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Linda. Great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us today. So what did your report find?
So as you mentioned, we released a study this week looking at the size of government in Canada over the past decade, and what we wanted to do was look at what was changing with the size of government in Canada and in the provinces, really leading up to COVID. A lot has been made of what various governments have done since COVID hit, but we wanted to look at what was changing with the size of government in Canada before COVID, and what we found, and I'm sure we can get into this in a bit more detail, is that government has been growing across the country even before the economic downturn arising from COVID came on. And that's certainly true in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Why is that?
Well, that's a good question. We do look in the study at the composition of government spending, and these are very broad measures. But in general, governments are spending more in almost every category. They're spending more on transfer payments, spending more on goods and services, spending more on subsidies. So we've seen sort of an across-the-board expansion in the size of government. But, I mean, one area that I would highlight specifically is government sector employment. That's obviously a key driver of spending. There are provinces in Canada that spend over 50% of their budget on compensation for employees. And so obviously, with increasing compensation and increasing levels of public sector employment, that's a key driver of the size of government really across the country.
So how does Newfoundland and Labrador compare to other jurisdictions?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we do get into that level of detail in the study. So Newfoundland and Labrador, in terms of the overall size of government, and I don't want to get too far into the details, but I'll explain a bit about our methodology. We're looking at the overall size of government using a measure called total consolidated government spending, which means at the municipal level, at the provincial level, and at the federal level combined, in Newfoundland and Labrador, government takes up about 46% of the provincial economy, so almost half. To address your question of how that ranks, it's the lowest in Atlantic Canada, but it's above average for the country. In terms of how that number compares to other Atlantic Canadian provinces, I would argue that the size of the oil and gas sector in Newfoundland and Labrador has an effect on that because, as I mentioned, we're measuring this as a share of the economy. But yeah, as I mentioned, the 46.1% of the economy occupied by government, that's before you start to account for regulation, tax expenditures, and other items of that nature. So depending how you measure it, you could argue that government is over 50% of the economy. For Canada as a whole, that number is 40%. The highest in the country is actually where I'm based in Nova Scotia. 61% of the economy is occupied by government, which is really a large number.
Newfoundland, it's no surprise to anybody listening, the provincial government is the province's largest single employer. Newfoundland and Labrador, of course, very small population. Jobs have always been of great concern to economic prosperity here. We have a huge geographic area. Services have to be supplied. It's not as simple as saying, okay, well, this hospital serves, you know, this amount of population because our population is so spread out. Is the provincial public service the right size for the population and geographic size of Newfoundland and Labrador?
Well, that's a great question. And I think you hit on a very important issue there. There's no question that the geography of Newfoundland and Labrador makes service delivery a real challenge for government. The population is very spread out over a large area. Obviously, that's going to increase costs. But I do think there is an argument, if you look at the data, that the government sector has grown too large in the province. As I mentioned, government as a whole is larger in Newfoundland and Labrador than it is in Canada in general, in many of the provinces. If you look at just what government spends on a per-person basis, Newfoundland and Labrador's number, at least going into COVID, is the highest in the country. So I certainly think there's an argument in that data that suggests that government could be reduced in size. One aspect of that that you mentioned is public sector employment. And we have data on that in the study that we're discussing. Between 2015 and 2019, and this is an average number, 27.5% of all workers in the province worked for government. You can put that a little differently and say that for every 1,000 residents in the province, in 2016, there were 103 public servants. Now, that's way above the national average. So I think there's probably reason to believe that the cost of delivering services in Newfoundland and Labrador is necessarily higher than some other places. But I think the degree to which government is larger in the province than it is in other places is something that really needs to be looked at. And I would argue that needs to be looked at in normal times, but it needs to be looked at even closer given the current, extremely challenging fiscal situation the province is in.
My guest today on Target St. John's is a policy analyst with the Fraser Institute and co-author of a new report on the size of government in Canada. Alex Whalen will be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest on Target St. John's today is a senior policy analyst with the Fraser Institute. He's also the co-author of a recent study on the size of government in Canada. Alex Whalen, we're talking to him from Halifax today. And you were talking about arguments for reducing the size of government. The reality is with our geography and aging demographics, it's often we often hear stories about frontline workers who are just overwhelmed by the demand that is placed on them. Is it realistic to consider downsizing the public service when frontline workers continuously say how difficult a job they have?
Well, Linda, I think that's a very important issue, but you have to look at the province in comparison to the rest of the country and in comparison to the province's ability to pay. If you look at spending, as we discussed before the break, spending has increased in the province in 17 of the last 20 years, and that's program spending by the provincial government. So I think when it comes to the delivery of services, at a certain point, questions have to be asked of whether they're being delivered in the most efficient manner possible. I have no doubt that there's discontent with services in a lot of areas, and I have no doubt that there are people on the front lines, especially during COVID, which is an extremely challenging time, who are doing the best they can and feel like they don't have enough resources. But I think particularly in the largest areas of government spending, which is, healthcare and education, it's probably time that provinces looked at different approaches, innovative approaches to service delivery, because we've seen the record in Newfoundland and Labrador and in other provinces been more money year after year after year. And I agree, there are still some very serious challenges with service delivery in those areas. And I think I would point out that more money might not always be the right answer.
The provincial government in recent years has shied away from mass layoffs in the public service. Instead, they've been imposing hiring freezes and attrition, retirements as a way to reduce the size of the public service. Is that the right approach, or does it need to go further?
Well, I think there's evidence now that it might need to go further if the province is going to get its fiscal house in order. A deficit that's over $2 billion is very serious, and I think if you look at provinces in Canada that have successfully dealt with those issues in the past, and there is historical precedent for this, those provinces have done so through meaningful reductions in size of government. Now, I want to be very clear. I mean, that's a painful process. There's no question. And it needs to be done in a sensitive way. You're dealing with important services that affect people's lives. Absolutely no question. But it is also bound to affect people's lives is the fiscal situation in the province. And so I think you have to balance those things. Whether layoffs are required, I don't have the specific data in front of me to see how much the province could save through attrition versus layoffs. What I will say, just point to sort of two areas. One, the province has the largest government sector employment levels in the country. That alone would suggest to me that there might be some room for reductions. But also, secondly, I think levels of public sector compensation have to be a part of the conversation. So, I mean, obviously, the province would have to engage with stakeholders on that. But whether it's actual layoffs or whether it's reduction in compensation, I think those are details that would have to be worked out. But there's research on this topic of government compensation. In fact, we released a report a couple of months ago looking at government sector workers in Atlantic Canada. And we compared them to comparable private sector workers and found that all levels of government sector workers in the four Atlantic Canadian provinces on average are receiving 11.9% more in compensation than private sector counterparts. I think that's one area right off the top that government could look at. Bringing the government wage bill in line with the private sector wage bill would yield substantial savings. I mean, that initiative alone doesn't necessarily mean that layoffs have to occur, although I'm not saying layoffs aren't necessary. There are a lot of savings available in the compensation side.
What about the role, some might say the responsibility of government as an economic generator? Unemployment rates in Newfoundland and Labrador traditionally have been among the highest in the country. Government, of course, employs a full third of the workers in Newfoundland and Labrador. In recent years, it appears as though government really feels it has the responsibility as an employer to maintain those kinds of numbers as best they can.
I do think that sometimes that's how that dynamic is viewed. I think it's a bit of a skewed perspective. It's rooted in good intentions, the government trying to lead economic development and trying to lead employment. I think in a lot of cases that's well-intentioned, but it's really not consistent with how successful economies grow and prosper. I think that if you look at economies that are dynamic and are growth-oriented in other jurisdictions, whether it's across Canada or other parts of the world, government has a role to play in getting the conditions right for economic growth, but government does not lead economic growth. I think in Newfoundland and Labrador and in many other provinces, the best thing that government can do for economic growth is to simply get out of the way. And so what I would point to in that area is regulatory reform, is reform on tax competitiveness, items like that. I think government has a meaningful role to play in economic growth. But at the end of the day, if the province is going to grow and prosper, and I certainly think it can and hope it can, I think the role of government is really to get the conditions right for the private sector to lead and not for government to be in the business of leading economic development itself.
You mentioned taxation reform, but is the goal here to keep taxes as low as possible, or do you think people would be willing to pay a higher level of taxes to maintain those jobs?
Well, that's a great question. I think that's, ultimately something that'll have to be decided through political process. The way I would look at tax competitiveness is that the province, badly needs to attract investment, badly needs to attract workers that are mobile, and really is competing in a global marketplace for those things. And some of Newfoundland and Labrador's tax rates are uncompetitive. So it might be the case that residents want to vote for higher taxes, although I'm skeptical. about that in some ways. But at the same time, you know, economic growth is going to be very important, and you have to look at how your taxes compare to tax rates elsewhere. And as it stands right now, I mean, this is true in all of the Atlantic provinces, that personal income tax rates are among the highest in North America. So I think you referenced population aging and demographics earlier. You know, let's just look at that a little closer. There are huge demographic challenges, really, in all of Canada. The population is aging, but it's most acute in the eastern provinces, which are tend to be older. And population is either flat or declining in Atlantic Canada, basically everywhere except for PEI. If Atlantic provinces are going to attract young workers, are going to retain the young workers that exist in our provinces, I do think that tax rates have an effect on that. I think the research supports it. And, you know, I'm sure you can relate to this. And when I grew up in Prince Edward Island, you know, half of my friends that I grew up with ended up moving to Alberta to work in the oil fields. Well, I think part of the, you know, that provides...
Now, apparently they're coming back.
Yeah, they are. They are right now, certainly. And there's a lot of challenges in Alberta. But I think that's an interesting example of just how mobile the workforce is. They go where opportunity exists, and they go where it makes economic sense for them to be. I agree taxes are only one part of that equation, but I think it's important not to overlook.
And of course, Newfoundlanders and Labradorians have been going away to work for generations. The first line of your report indicates that the size of government has consequences for long-term economic growth. What do you mean?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. One of the concepts that we introduced in the study is the concept of whether there might be an optimal size of government. Now, admittedly, that's a complicated topic, and there's no perfect answer. But we looked at international research from countries all over the world that compare similarly to Canada in terms of their economic structure, and from provinces and states in North America. And what that research shows is that the optimal size of government in terms of maximizing economic growth is somewhere between 26 and 30% of the economy. Now, that's not to say that that has to be where any individual province will end up. People may, through the democratic process, choose for government to be larger, but we're merely pointing out that if you want to maximize economic growth, research says that government should be between 26 and 30% of the economy. So just to take it back to what we were talking about earlier, government in Newfoundland and Labrador is about 46% of the economy before COVID. So putting those two things together, there's reason to believe that the size of government might be holding back economic growth. And in the study, we discussed, you know, some of the ways that that can be the case. When government reaches a certain size, it starts to crowd out the private sector, whether it's, you know, bidding and competing for workers or competing for investment dollars and things like that. So we're trying to sort of highlight the consequences of larger government.
So how do you ensure those frontline public services while considering the size of government?
Well, that's an important consideration. I think there are a lot of great examples across the country of innovation in service delivery. And that's really where my mind goes on that question. And I think research supports that. It's definitely a challenge to reduce the size of government while maintaining services. But I think the key is that you can't do things the way they were done before. So our study doesn't get into individual reforms in individual departments, obviously. But I think one thing that the study does highlight is that, you know, spending has been going up year after year after year. And if people are unhappy with services, or if services are stretched thin, at a certain point you have to wonder whether more money is the answer. So I would argue that doing things differently and trying to learn lessons from other jurisdictions where they've succeeded in doing things differently would be a great place to start.
My guest today on Target St. John's is a policy analyst with the Fraser Institute, Alex Whalen. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today on Target St. John's is a senior policy analyst with The Fraser Institute, Alex Whalen, he's also the co-author of a recent study on the changing size of government in Canada. And you mentioned that public sector aside, the overall size of government across Canada is getting bigger. What do you mean by that?
Well, in the study that we released this week, we looked at total government spending across the country, and the way that we looked at that is as a share of the economy. And so government has been growing across Canada pretty consistently since 2007. And this is very important context going in the current economic downturn. For Canada as a whole, government has been growing, and for 8 out of 10 provinces, government has been growing. And as we discussed before the break, you know, there are serious economic consequences when government grows beyond a certain size. And I think that coming out of the COVID recession, which hopefully we'll be able to do as soon as possible, looking at the size of government in Canada is going to be a very crucial discussion, really, in every province and at the federal level.
Sorry, I'm just trying to frame my next question, because we have a major budget that's coming up now at the end of September. It's been this Sure. process has been delayed since March, of course, due to COVID-19. We've got another interim supply bill that was debated in the House just this week for over a three-month period. What kind of a job has Andrew Furey and his cabinet got ahead of them to, one, mitigate the effects of COVID-19 and ensuring public safety while tackling the growing deficit?
Yeah, it's tough. There's no question. And I don't want any of our discussion today to take away from some of the real difficult decisions that are facing the Premier and his cabinet. There is no question it is tough. But Newfoundlanders and Labradorians are resilient people, and they can certainly get through this. And I think that the public policy is going to have a really important role to play in that. Some of our upcoming research, which we haven't released yet, but I'm happy to give a preview towards, looks at prior historical situations in Canada where provinces have faced this type of situation. Now, it's not the exact same, but it is comparable. One example that we'll be discussing is Saskatchewan in the late 80s and early 90s. They were dealing with a very large provincial deficit. Actually, on a per capita basis, it was very comparable to what Newfoundland and Labrador is dealing with now. And I think there are some lessons to be drawn from how they came out of that, especially given that the structure of the provincial economy in Saskatchewan is in some ways comparable to Newfoundland and Labrador, not in every way, but in some ways it is. And what they were able to do is meaningfully reduce the size of government, to become more competitive on tax rates, and to let private sector lead the way in economic development, economic growth. And you look at Saskatchewan since that time, since they were able to get their fiscal house in order, they become one of the most dynamic and prosperous economies in Canada. So I think there are historical lessons for the Premier and his cabinet when they're debating this upcoming budget. But I think really the central thesis of our study this week is that the size of government has to be a very important part of that conversation.
The former finance minister, Saskatchewan finance minister, was on VOCM a year or so ago, and she was here on a speaking tour, and she said, you know, if you don't get your fiscal house in order, the decisions are going to be made for you. Is that something that Newfoundland and Labrador could possibly be facing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As I'm sure you know, Linda, the Bank of Canada has been basically providing the province cover when it comes to issuing provincial debt. I think that's really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what could happen in terms of the federal government. I'm familiar with Janice McKinnon's sort of comments on what Saskatchewan went through in the early 90s, and they were forced to reform their budget in a significant manner out of fear that the federal government was basically going to take over the finances of the province. And I think if you look at the numbers, Newfoundland and Labrador is in a similar position today as Saskatchewan was in at that time. Now, there's no doubt that all provinces are in a challenging fiscal situation due to COVID. But I think the important thing that I would stress is that in terms of the province's relationship with the federal government, no doubt the federal government will have a role to play in the recovery. But I think that the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, in terms of their own balance sheet and their own fiscal decisions, is going to have to demonstrate that they're making progress sort of within the province. And I think that is the first question the federal government would ask in terms of any support. And I think that really is the first step to ensuring that the federal government, you know, doesn't become too intrusive in provincial finances.
Well, that's the difficulty, isn't it? I mean, governments right across Canada right now, Ottawa itself arguably, is all in the same sort of boat when it comes to mitigating against COVID-19 and ensuring that people are happy and safe and, you know, they have some kind of an income and their health care is there for them. So, you know, are we any different, really, is what I'm asking, than any other sector in Newfoundland and in Canada?
Yeah, I agree in part. I think you're absolutely right that every province is facing fiscal challenges. I think, unfortunately, the numbers for Newfoundland and Labrador are worse than anywhere else in the country. I take no pleasure in saying that, obviously, but I think the numbers would suggest it. Per capita debt is the highest in the country. Per capita deficit is the highest in the country. You know, unfortunately, due to some of the fiscal decisions that were made before COVID, the province finds itself in really a tougher situation than some other provinces. I mean, if you look at nearby New Brunswick, I mean, we don't know exactly how the year is going to end, but they're talking about potentially a $300 million deficit, where Newfoundland and Labrador is looking at the $2.1 billion. Who knows, it could be higher. I think the scale of the challenges is larger in Newfoundland and Labrador, unfortunately, and I think that's going to demand that government take more serious action. But you're definitely right that there are fiscal challenges all across the country. There's no province that doesn't have a fiscal challenge right now, and I think that's, you know, that's going to be, there's going to be some very serious decisions will have to be made over the next couple of years.
Newfoundland and Labrador has a tendency to turn to Ottawa when times are particularly tough. We have a shrinking population, a growing, more seniors and that sort of thing. So, you know, we're rather limited when it comes to revenue. Now we're facing this hit to oil and gas. That's another major employer in this province, of course. A lot of young people and family age people working in the oil and gas sector. NOIA is comparing what's happening now to the cod moratorium 25 years ago. So what's the best approach in addressing what's happening with oil and gas right now?
Well, that's a great question, I do think that's an area where the federal government has a role to play. Oil and gas sector, as you know, is crucial to the provincial economy, and things are dire right now. They're dire in a lot of places. It's similar in Alberta, and well, the province doesn't have much control over what goes on in global oil and gas markets, but I do think that there's a role for government to play in getting the conditions right. Because I think, I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen with the price of oil, but I think if you look historically, it's been a volatile industry where things go up and things go down. So I don't think it's a stretch to assume that eventually that industry will rebound. I think the question then becomes, what can government do to assist in that? One area that we've provided some research on is in the regulatory sphere. You know, Canada has, and obviously this extends to Newfoundland and Labrador, has an uncompetitive regulatory process. Oil and gas companies make their investments on a global basis when it comes to, you know, exploration and production decisions. And if you're a jurisdiction that can't get things approved, that's going to affect competitiveness. So now I think that's obviously a bit down the road. There are more acute issues facing that sector right now, but I do think that there's an important role for government to play to reform the regulatory system and to open things up for the private sector to invest in this industry. I mean, as you know, it's somewhere north of 25% of the provincial economy. It's in dire straits right now, and I think that there definitely is a role for government to assist in that recovery. you mentioned something else about, declining revenues, and I think that's certainly true. Provinces that rely on oil and gas royalties are going to be facing massive holes in their budget this year, but I think it's important that government gets the conditions right that when the economy starts to rebound, that the private sector can lead that revenue growth. You know, increased private sector activity, of course, is good for government, and I think that'll be an important consideration.
So how do you square that circle, though? What is the difficulty in providing some form of package or assistance to people who have lost jobs because of the downturn in the oil sector, while at the same time discussing downsizing government? How do you choose one worker over another?
Well, I'm not advocating that. I want to be clear that I think the role of government is to get the regulatory mix right, to get the tax mix right. I don't know exactly what the appropriate role for government is in the oil and gas sector right now, but I want to be clear that, you know, our research and my research hasn't advocated an aid package. I think that without speaking to any industry specifically, the time for government to be, you know, adding subsidies is not right now. So I think our research is really focused on government getting out of the way from a regulatory perspective. I mean, you can look in the middle of COVID. Just last month, the federal government added a whole new suite of regulations that are going to significantly impact oil and gas exploration. If you ask me what I think the federal government should do and what our research should suggest, is that they need to take actions to become much more competitive from a regulatory and tax perspective. I haven't looked closely at the various proposals for aid, but I want to be very clear that I'm not necessarily advocating that. And I think you're exactly right. It would be hard to advocate for a smaller size of government at the same time while advocating for subsidies.
My guest today on Target St. John's is Alex Whalen. He's a policy analyst with the Fraser Institute. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today on Target St. John's is a policy analyst with the Fraser Institute, Alex Whalen. And we've been talking a lot about the size of government, the impacts of COVID-19. And Alex, one of the things that COVID-19 has taught us all is that, there are different ways to do things. I was broadcasting, for instance, for a full 6 months from my dining room table. A lot of us have realized that we can pivot. We can change the way we do things, and we can do it, in some cases, more efficiently. Is that something that maybe government should consider moving forward? Have things changed forever?
Absolutely, Linda. I think that's a great point. Whether things have changed forever, who knows? I think it's hard to answer that question right now, but I definitely agree that COVID has shown us that there are different ways of doing things and has perhaps rattled us out of a sense of complacency in some ways about how work can get done and where work can get done. I think that that's definitely something that government needs to consider in the province when, evaluating the path forward. I think a lot of private sector companies have realized, that there are cost savings available, there are efficiency savings available, and also that, perhaps in some cases, their employees are happier working from home or working in a different setting, a different context. I definitely think that government can learn lessons in that area as we move forward.
I know that the Fraser Institute put out a study within the last year or so on a 4-day work week. That pricked up my ears because I know somebody who, in lieu of taking vacation, 2-3 weeks vacation in the middle of summer when things at her particular workplace were especially busy, she burned off her vacation, so to speak, through 3-day work. 4-day work week. So with a 3-day weekend, she's back to regular weeks now. She doesn't know. she's not too fussy about it. She really enjoyed having that third day for a weekend. Is that also something that, employers and governments as a whole should consider?
Well, it could be. I'm glad you referenced the study. I think that was a really interesting piece of research. And what we were trying to get at is that productivity matters in these things. And so what we mean as economists by productivity tends to be value produced per hour worked. But really, you know, how much work can a person get done? How much value can a worker create in a given period of time? And so what the four-day work week study was looking at is, so over time, we have productivity growth in Canada and in the provinces at one level. And in the last 20 years, it's significantly slowed down. So the point that we were making is that if we could somehow get productivity growth to increase back to historical levels, people would be able to work four-day weeks and basically maintain the same economic output. So we're trying to stress the importance of productivity growth and economic prosperity, and that study gets into some of the different policy options for increasing it. I certainly think there are a lot of potential merits to a four-day work week. And in general, as you mentioned off the top, COVID has sort of caused people to, in some ways, rethink, you know, work structure. But I think at the end of the day, that question comes down to productivity. If workers and if companies can produce more on a per hour basis or even return to historical trends, the option would be there to work less or to work the same amount and produce more and to see increased prosperity.
So what's affecting productivity levels then?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a complicated question. I do think it relates to our main topic today, which is the size of government. Productivity, by and large, is driven by the private sector, and I think a lot goes into private sector productivity growth. I think that it's important to get, obviously, the tax regime right. But at the end of the day, even just return to historical norms would be valuable. But there's a lot that goes into that. There's, of course, demographics and other complicating factors.
When you say demographics, what do you mean? Are certain generations more productive than others?
No, I think what I mean is that labor force participation, for example, in Canada has been declining. And Canada experienced really robust labor force participation growth through the 60s and 70s and 80s through a combination of factors, through a younger population, through more women entering the workforce. I think demographics have changed where we have more elderly people now, we have more people retiring, but that really, in my mind, only emphasizes the need for productivity growth. So I think what I would say is that demographics are a bit of a headwind on productivity growth, but that overall, it's still a very important issue, and there are things that government and the private sector can do to improve productivity.
Years ago, the mantra when you got out of school was, now go get a good government job, because there was always good benefits to be had. And I know you had a recent study as well on public sector versus private sector pay and benefits. You referenced it earlier in the show. Is there that big a gulf when it comes to that level of benefits?
Well, I think our research suggests that there certainly is. Now, I want to be really clear that the delivery of government services is an important mandate. We need civil servants. There are a lot of civil servants who have been doing excellent work during COVID-19. I don't wish to take away from any of that, but you referenced our study on government sector employment versus private sector employment. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we found that in Atlantic Canada, comparing apples to apples, so a government sector worker in a similar job to a private sector worker, the government sector worker on average receives 11.9% more in wages. And of course, that's only the tip of the iceberg. There are other forms of compensation that government sector workers benefit from that private sector workers don't, whether it's, you know, defined benefit pension plans, whether it's job security, whether it's more generous leave. Those are all items that add to government's bottom line. And I think the sort of the thrust of the report that we released at that time is really that government, you know, needs talent, there's no question, and government needs to compete. But the finding of a large wage gap between the government sector and the private sector is really not consistent with how government needs to look at finances right now, especially.
Well, arguably, though, that difference could be attributed to the hard work of the labor movement. Is that what is makes that difference, unionized versus non-unionized?
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest, what the contributing factors are. Our report didn't delve that deep. It was more of a high-level look at compensation. So we didn't get into, you know, causation of which exact factors were driving wages up. It was more of a descriptive study to say, you know, on average, government workers make X and private sector workers make Y. I have no doubt that it's possible that organization could lead to increased pressure on public sector wages, but that wasn't something that the report specifically looked at.
There's also concerns within the private sector about the diminishing availability of pension programs, that sort of thing. Is that a problem in the private sector?
That's a good question. I haven't specifically researched it. The only thing really that I would point to on pensions was that same study that we did revealed that the government sector is really the only place now where defined benefit pensions still exist. I don't doubt that it's possible that there are deficiencies in private sector pensions as well. But what I would say is that, you know, private sector pensions are often driven by an employer's ability to pay, whereas government sector pensions really are the business of everybody. And I think at the very least, we can ask the question of why they're not on par. But like I said, in terms of a detailed analysis of private sector pensions is not what we did in that particular study.
Just over a minute left, Alex. Any final thoughts on the size of government, especially here in Newfoundland and Labrador?
Well, I think the data is clear. I would encourage anybody listening, if they want to have a closer look, to go to our website at fraserinstitute.org. The size of government has significantly grown in Newfoundland and Labrador and also in Canada up to and through COVID. It's an important matter of public policy that I think people really need to look closely at. And really, that's it.
Alex Whalen, thanks for the time this afternoon. Appreciate it very much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Linda. I enjoyed our conversation. There's some really serious challenges ahead, but I'm confident that collectively we can sort this out.
Our guest today on Target St. John's has been Alex Whalen. He's a policy analyst with the Fraser Institute. Our guest tomorrow will be Rob Greenwood of the Harris Center. He's going to be talking to us, of course, about demographics in Newfoundland and Labrador and what's being termed a recent COVID blip in our population here in Newfoundland and Labrador. Stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening.